Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Friday, May 25th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And I am happy to announce that this is now the home of the number one best-selling book on Amazon in the free ebook category for spiritual, was it spiritual self-help? I can't remember what the exact category name was. But yeah, we zoomed right to the top. So we're off to a great start with this promotion. Really, really exciting. People sending out congratulations all over the place.
One in spiritual and number three in motivational.
There you go. Yeah. And we've just started. The promotion just started today. It's going to go on for another 3.5 days. So, I mean, who knows what heights we can hit. But wow.
And I'm going to watch. I'll be watching all the stats all weekend.
You will. Oh, okay.
I find that most fun.
It's exciting. It's fun. I mean, it was great. I haven't had much chance since I posted it this morning to do anything with it because I've been out running around for my wife's gardening business all day long. Just got back 45 minutes ago, saw that we were number one. Keisha had found that. You had found that. So that was exciting news. And getting all these congratulations from people all over the place. And what an exciting thing. But I barely had a chance to absorb it because I've been out running around. So I'm glad you're going to be watching the numbers. That's great. That's really great.
Oh, yes. I am big time watching the numbers, taking screenshots, just enjoying it. Totally enjoying it.
Fantastic. That's great. Yeah, it's exciting. It's fun. I mean, I guess in the grand scheme of things, most people don't even know that we're number one because most people don't even follow the bestsellers. But, you know, some people do. And for those who do, hey, they see us at the top of the list. And that means from now on, we can always say, in fact, I'm going to change the corner of the book to say number one bestseller on Amazon because it is.
Yeah. So. Well, and it's number one for the ebook. And then when we launch the paperback on Tuesday, you know, we'll put out a big push for that. And I expect that we'll go number one for that one as well.
Wouldn't that be great? Oh, my goodness. This is very exciting times. Very exciting. In fact, I was looking at the control panel. I get a control panel, of course, because I can see, you know, the numbers and so forth. I came home and I looked at, they show you a graph of, you know, the day by day. Of course, all the days are blank because we hadn't been selling up until now. And then over on the right-hand side, there's this long line that shows all the sales that are going on. So I'm like, oh, this is good. I like this.
That's so cool.
It's very cool. So and, how you know, are you doing?
Since the free book is available from today through Monday,
right?
I think, you know, we won't be here on the weekends to be talking about what's going on.
Right.
But right before the show started, we talked about should we do Memorial Day show or not, being that's a holiday.
Yeah.
And you said, let's talk afterwards. But I'm thinking it would be good to just tell our listeners one way or another. And let's see if you agree with me. I used some of my tools and I was feeling to not do the show on Monday.
That's fine with me.
Okay,
I mean, we podcasters need a break every once in a while.
And we get to enjoy a holiday, you know?
Yeah. Why not, you know?
Yeah.
They're going to be 42
other
holiday
shows. We'll call it a holiday for us, and we will not do the show on Monday. But definitely everybody come back on Tuesday, and that's the day we're going to be talking about our paperback sales. And so you'll be getting, you know, the news on, you know, buy the paperback if that's something that you want to do. I know I love to have a copy in my hand, and I love to feel the paper and see things.
I think a lot of people do. Yeah, even the millennials seem to like that. I mean, they do like the ebooks, but a lot of millennials like holding a paper book in their hands, and there's something comforting about that. There's something that's very comfortable and relaxed and just, it's easy. Whereas a lot of people get a little bit frantic about technology. So if the ebook doesn't work just exactly the way you want it to, it doesn't become the same kind of fun experience for a lot of people.
Yeah. So. And I mean, it's only $14.99 in US dollars, you know. And so the fact that we're giving the book away free this weekend, you know, it's great to be able to have both versions. It's not like, well, which one should I do? You know, because we get one for free, you know, pay a small amount for the actual, you know, paperback version, and then you got everything. Because, you know, not everybody wants to, you know, do it on a digital where the screen is so small. It's like, it's nice to sometimes just have it in your hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, walk from room to room as you read, because that's my style.
That's your style? You're a walking reader? Oh, okay. That's fair.
Well,
that's
I walk from room to room. Like, I'll start by reading in my bedroom, and then I'll read in the living room, and I'll just take the book with me when I just feel like I want a different environment.
Oh, I see. Okay.
To read.
Because I'm a pacing thinker, so I was wondering if you can pace while you're reading, you know?
But, you know, my eyes are on a computer screen so much that every now and then I like to give my eyes a break.
Hmm.
So that way, you know, it's like I don't want to look at cell phones and tablets and computers, and actually looking at a hard, you know, actual paper sometimes is just, it's different because it doesn't have the blue, what is it, the UV blue or whatever that is, you know, that's on a screen. And so anyway. That's my push for the paperback, which we will do on Tuesday.
Also, I just learned, I'm learning a lot about Amazon. I knew a fair amount, but I haven't done a book launch on Amazon in 10 years, and things have definitely changed. One thing which kind of surprised me is that if you're not a U.S. resident, the U.S. link doesn't actually work for you. So I'm after this podcast, I'm going to get onto the homepage of our website and into the social media again and put up more posts that include links to all the other country websites that Amazon has, you know, Germany, France, Italy, Brazil, Australia, Japan, India, whatever. Get all of them out there so that whatever country you're in or whatever country you're closest to, whatever version of Amazon you're able to get closest to, you'll be able to find a copy, a free copy of the ebook. So we want to make sure everybody
gets
it.
Well, and I have a lot of friends in Canada, so yeah, we definitely need that posted as well.
Well, the Canada link is there too. I sent that out to all the authors just before the podcast, and afterward I'll make sure it gets up and, you know, so the public can see it too. But yeah, cool stuff happening though. Very cool. Very fun.
Very cool. It's a great way to have a Friday, isn't it?
What a nice way to lead into the weekend too, you know, because now we got the 3-day weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know we're already number one bestsellers. We don't have to wait to see how we're going to get there. Boom, we got there. Bang, really quick. So now it's just gravy. Anything that comes in now is gravy. It's like, this is wonderful. This is the best place to be.
So now the next thing is, now that we've hit number one, how long can we sustain it?
Ah, there's a question. There is a good question.
You know,
I don't know what the
answer
is.
And can we jump in the motivational category, which right now is number three for free ebooks?
Oh, I think we're going to hit that one. We're going to hit that one. I feel very confident we're going to hit that one. I mean, to get to number three as quickly as we did, I think it's just a matter of time. I mean, who knows exactly when it's going to be, but it's going to happen.
Yay! I agree. I totally agree with that. And honestly, I never doubted for a moment that we would get a number one status for ebook and for the paperback. You know, to me, that was just part of the planning of doing it. And I remember when you, and I mean, this is very LOA, it's appropriate to talk
it
about,
is.
Because when you started reaching out to different coaches to ask them if they wanted to be part of the book and co-author, one of the things you said to them is, we intend for this book to go number one. And wouldn't this be an awesome thing for you to have a number one bestseller in your repertoire as you go on conducting business?
Exactly. Yeah. And here it is. We got it.
Yeah. And so that's what I love about it. We didn't start out saying, let's just write a book and see where it goes. We said, let's start out writing a best-selling book.
And we did it. We did it.
Yeah. So that's really very, very cool.
As Joel points out, there are approximately 12 million books published every year. I don't know if that number is exact, but I know it's a large number. And you can imagine what tiny percentage of that ends up at number one in any given category. So this is from that perspective, this is a very significant threshold to reach, to be bestseller.
And, you know,
basically on the first day of our major launch. I mean, that's really something.
And I was just kind of paying attention to the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the books that stood out to me was, one of them was The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And the other one was The Secret.
Ah, yes.
You know, in the spiritual category. And I thought, those are both good ones, you know, and I'd love to see The Secret there because, you know, that's another law of attraction book. And Think and Grow Rich is on there, which has been around forever.
Oh yeah. That's like 80 years old or something like that. Yeah.
You know, and I doubt anybody's doing any marketing for that, but
no, not really.
That one has sustained the power of, you know, people by word of mouth talking about it, which I think is so awesome.
It is. And it's a great book, too. It's actually the first book we did a chapter by chapter review on here on the program. Joel and I did that one about, a year and a half ago, something like that. And it kind of kicked off the pattern of doing these books as, you know, podcast topics. So, yeah, that one has a warm place in my heart, I can say.
That's nice. Very cool. And then also right before the show, you sent an email to all of the co-hosts by one of our listeners. And she just, you know, had such warm and lovely things to say about each one of the co-hosts that I just wanted to give her a shout out and say thank you for you know, articulating that.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that there's a lot of our listeners that really appreciate what we have to offer and that they listen on a regular basis. But, you know, it's really special when someone takes the time to write it. And she didn't just say, hey, great show. She kind of listed the specific things that like really spoke to her and said something specific about every co-host. And so, you know, a big thank you to you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. She wrote quite extensively and quite eloquently. And she also announced herself as one of the many people who subscribe and listen to over 30 episodes a month. So thank you for that, too. That was great to see.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that people are doing it, but it's so much better when you hear from somebody, you know, because now it becomes personal. Well, now it becomes like a flesh and blood human being at the other end. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That feels really good.
That's a very good thing. Yeah. You know, and even while we were doing our social media push today, a couple of my friends, this was so cute. One of my dear friends that I've literally known since the seventh grade. She said, hey, Wendy, I just grabbed my copy of the free ebook today. Thanks so much. And then she writes in there a personal note to her husband and said, honey, look at the post right above. Go get your copy too.
That
was precious.
That's great.
So she was using our post to send her husband a message.
Yeah, right.
Why? Because she knew her husband would actually see our post, which I thought that was cool.
That's also cool. Yeah, sure. But wow. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that you really hope for whenever you do any kind of marketing launch, but particularly a book launch. You want people to share. You want people to say, hey, look at this great thing that I found, you know, and I want you to have the chance to have it too. I love that. I love the fact that people do that.
And, you know, we've been doing this since Monday, where every day we've put out different social media posts.
Right.
And when you're the one doing the posting, it feels as though, okay, I just said this yesterday. Or, oh my God, it's like a repeat. And if you look at my timeline, it's like, okay, the book picture, the book picture, the book picture.
Yeah,
but
right.
What makes it so valuable is we don't know when people are going to look at their Facebook. We don't know when they're going to go to LinkedIn. We don't know, you know, when people are going to see it. So the fact that we've done it every day for now 5 days, you know, and we'll keep doing it over the weekend. My hope is the people who really would want this as a, you know, a free ebook will see it because they'll see one of our posts, surely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the simple fact is that if you can tell a little bit of information from the reach number, right? So for instance, when I posted the first post on Monday about the book about to be released later on in the week, that post, I believe, within the first 12 hours got something like 5,000 eyeballs looking at it, 5,000 sets of eyeballs. And, of course, there have been many more since then. So you know each one is reaching a large number of people and probably not always the same people. So that's the cool thing. We're like you say, we're reaching a lot of people at various times. We never really know when it's going to fall into somebody's timeline, but they're seeing it. And that's what we wanted. We wanted people to know about it. And they're buying it. They're taking it. They're taking the free copy. I mean, well over 100 in the first few hours. And I know it's going to be much higher than that by the time we're done. So it's great.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah. And I have not grabbed my free copy, but I plan to do that.
Oh, good.
As well.
Yeah.
And I might be strategic about it. Like if I see one day, not at number one, that's when
I'll
buy it.
Oh, you're going to boost the numbers?
I'm a strategic person. What can I tell you?
I don't think you're going to have a problem with that, but it's nice to know that we have somebody who's watching our back on that. That's good.
I don't know that one free, you know, click is going to make the difference, but hey, I love strategy. I love to watch the numbers climb. It makes me happy. It's all a game. You know, and it's a game that I'm playing with law of attraction. You know, and it's like, I love law of attraction. I think it's pretty obvious that I love law of attraction. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is one of those lighthearted moments that I really love it in even a more special way. And, you know, I can tell you there has been, at least on my part, zero resistance whatsoever thinking about us attaining number one. I mean, it's like we really have been practicing it and planning it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I believe, you know, I've said this before, that the easiest way for law of attraction to get a hold of what we have, what we desire, is when it's just a lighthearted desire and there's just no heaviness in it. There's no conflicting, contradictory energy. There's no fear, doubt, worry, or concern. There's no what if, there's no but. I mean, it's just all, yeah, we're going to be number one. Duh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That I was doing the same thing actually today when I woke up. I know that I do have, like most people, I think almost everybody does this to one extent or another, I do have a tendency to attach to certain things. One thing that I would easily attach to is, well, you know, how many sales are there going to be? And the last thing I want to do is attach to that, because that's a frantic, you know, lack-based kind of feeling.
Right.
So I got in front of the mirror and started doing my mirror exercises. And I usually do that for like, what, 30 seconds or a minute, something like that. I was in front of the mirror for a full 5 minutes. And
wow.
Basically refusing to leave until I saw myself grinning and jumping up and down. That was my standard this morning. I swear to God, that was my standard. I had to get myself into that level, because I knew if I could get to that level, then I'd stop fretting about the numbers. And you know what?
Wow.
It worked. I got myself to the point I was literally jumping up and down. And then actually for most of the rest of the day, I wasn't actually doing anything with the book. I had to go out and help Louise because there was a bunch of stuff that was going on with her gardening business that she needed help with. So I've been out of the house for like 5-6 hours. No time at all to fret about numbers. I mean, not even think about it. Not even occur to me to think about it. But it did work. It did take my mind off it. And I found that even as I was doing the work for her business and, you know, ferrying things around and fixing computers and stuff like that, I had a smile on my face. I felt good. Yeah. There was no concern at all, no worry, no what if, no horrible hows, nothing like that. It was just, this is a
good
day.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and while you were talking, I was getting the word elevate.
Mm.
And I was kind of asking some questions about, you know, how we got to where we are. And I was getting this sense that this book is to elevate the author's position in their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
As well as elevate the readers' lives.
Exactly.
To encourage, to uplift, to inspire.
Yes.
And so it's really to elevate all of us, everyone who's participating, whether we're on the writing side, your side, which is the editor side, which is the biggest amount of work, or the ones who are reading. It's for all of us to be elevated. And I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm. It is cool. By the way, there's something else I want to mention too, and I'm glad that I thought of this during the podcast. As anyone who follows Amazon knows, reviews on Amazon, reader reviews, are really important. They're particularly important from the perspective of what we're trying to do in terms of, you know, hitting more and more bestseller statuses on Amazon, because those reader reviews really count a lot from Amazon's point of view. They actually figure that into what books they're going to show in what order when somebody does a search. So one of the things you do not want to do is you don't want to put up fake reviews where you pay somebody to do a review or something like that. What you really want are people who are actually buyers and readers placing the reviews. With that in mind, I want to ask anybody who is downloading and reading the ebook, please put up a review on Amazon, especially if it's 5-star. We love the 5-star reviews. But whatever your review is, put the review up, because first of all, it tells us how we did. And second of all, perhaps even more importantly, it tells Amazon how we did. And once the Amazon
Absolutely.
Knows how we did, they will help us spread the word even more.
Yeah. And if, you know, like, it's great to get a generic review.
Mm-hmm.
And or if there was a chapter that really spoke to your heart,
yes.
Go ahead and call that out and say how you were inspired by it. Say how perhaps it changed your thought process and how you're going to utilize that going forward. Because I know for myself, when I am a big reader of reviews,
mm-hmm.
and if somebody calls out a specific part of the book and it's something that really resonates with me, that's the thing that puts me over the edge that goes, oh yeah, I'm going to buy that. Even
mm-hmm.
if it's just to find that one paragraph this guy's talking about,
right.
I want to know more about it. So yeah, that's a great idea, Walt. I'm glad
they're more
it.
Meaningful. I mean, when you get somebody who takes the time to really write out all of the details about what it is they liked, that kind of review is so much more meaningful than, that was a great book. That doesn't
right.
tell you much. I mean, okay, they thought it was a great book. That's nice. But what was so great about it? Whereas somebody who talks about how, you know, the fourth story, they couldn't believe it. They were crying with happiness as they were reading it. That one tells you a whole lot more than just, it was a great book.
And, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking of this now, but maybe it's because my friend Keisha, who's staying with me, her room is right across from where my office is. And during the day, we've been talking about the book and the stats and whatever. And she just like threw out this shriek. And she's like, Wendy, your story is like part of the the preview because, you know, I'm the first chapter, and that's well, that's like really cool.
Yeah, how about that?
But what I wanted to say is, you know, I have three chapters in the book, mm-hmm. and what I find fascinating for me is that one of the chapters, I didn't know about law of attraction at all,
mm-hmm.
but it's all about how law of attraction still played a part, whether you know it or not.
Yep.
One of them, I barely knew about law of attraction, but through another spiritual modality, I was kind of learning about how to take responsibility for that which you have in your life, that which you create. You know, I started to know that reality was not something that just happened to me, but that I had some part in it.
Right.
But I didn't know really much about law of attraction at the time.
Mm-hmm,
and so that story to me is really cool because you still get to see how law of attraction works, whether I'm aware of it or not.
Right.
And then the third story I wrote, I was not only a student, but also a teacher by this point of law of attraction, and how, oh my gosh, that story just rolled.
Mm.
I mean, like, I can look at the three stories and recognize one had much more ups and downs and roller coaster bumps and bruises because I didn't know how to use law of attraction in a deliberate way.
Right. Right.
The second one was definitely in greater ease, but there were a few bumps and bruises along the way because I didn't really know how to, again, use law of attraction in a deliberate way. But by the third story, I was a deliberate creator. And it wasn't a matter of, gosh, I wonder how this is going to happen. Will it happen? I don't know about it. It's like, oh, no, it'll happen, and watch it unfold.
And for me,
my own personal experience in the three chapters that I presented, I kind of take a step back and look at that and go, wow, that's actually a mark of my own personal development.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And in fact, it's fun. That's one of the fun parts about writing for a book like this, because I can't remember how many stories. I think I had like 6-7 stories in there. And the same kind of thing, you could look at what the time frame was for what the particular story was. And just from the actions that we took, you could tell whether or not we really understood how LOA works. Because like you said, in those situations where we knew where LOA works, it was just as smooth as could be. I mean, it was almost like there was no crisis. I mean, there was a crisis in many of the stories. But when you actually played it out, the crisis was like nothing. It just disappeared into, you know, beautifulness. All because we knew how the law of attraction worked. The greater crises actually happened where we didn't know how it worked. And we just kind of stumbled through it.
Exactly. Because my third story, I would say there was no crisis. It was really, here's what I desire. And now let's see how the universe delivers it.
How
it was delivered was in very unique ways. And to me, that's what made that story kind of so juicy. It's like, wow, things that other people might call just a circumstantial coincidence. Oh, no, it was by design.
Mm.
Because even though I couldn't have predicted how the things would show up, when they showed up, I'm like, oh, I know what this is. This is a part of the thing I'm wanting to create.
And I know which story you're talking about. And you're right. That one, it wasn't a crisis. It was just kind of unfolding one layer after the next. It just kind of naturally, one fell into the next, which fell into the next, which fell into the next. You could almost see a guiding hand going on there. That's how clean it was.
Yeah. And that to me has a really inspiring message of like what you said, just there was a clean hand divinely guiding each step along the way for me to get the thing that meant a lot to me, the thing that I really desired. And receiving it was really easy. I didn't resist the receiving of it. It was more like just with curiosity, playful curiosity, like, I wonder what's going to happen next. I wonder if this is going to be part of this thing that I wanted. Huh, son of a gun, here it is.
There
isn't
it is.
This fun? I like this. And I like this, and I like this, and I like this. I mean, it's just a beautiful example of how when you're allowing yourself to be purposeful and deliberate and conscious about the things you do, desire, and how you want to manifest, law of attraction is like, okay, that's an easy one. Easy breezy, you know, because we all know that the only part of any manifestation when there's difficulty, it's because we are adding the difficulty layer.
Right, exactly.
We may not always know how we're doing it or what it is, but, you know, whatever result is playing out in our life, it's because of what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what we're broadcasting into the universe. So if we're not getting what we want, It's because we're focused more on what we don't want, even if we're not aware of it.
Mm. What you described, too, about your third story, that description could just as easily be used to describing how the whole book came together. Because really, that process was a very easy process. I mean, I don't know if it seemed that way to you, but it sure seemed that way to me. I was taking the lead in it, of course, but even so, even with all the stuff coming in, the stories coming in and so forth, and the editing to be done, it was smooth. There were no bumps. I mean, any bumps that came along were like little tiny speed bumps that I barely even noticed. Like, oh, what was that? You know, was that a problem? Mm-hmm. No, I guess it was, but it didn't bother me, so we'll just move on. It was that kind of thing. It was the simplest project. When I compare this to the book that I self-published 10 years ago, Night and Day, I mean, wow. That one I was practically pulling my hair out trying to make it work, and it never became a bestseller. I don't think it sold more than 25 copies. I mean, it just didn't sell hardly anything at all. But all the effort I put in, and it was huge amounts of effort. This, there wasn't any effort. This was effortless.
Now, I am willing to say, because I do believe this, that your first very efforting book that you did put a lot of what I prefer into your vortex.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
So that by the time you came to this book, your preferences were noted. Your inner being went, we know what you want. That one was hard. You want easy. Okay. And you were in a place to allow it to be easy. You weren't throwing up any roadblocks anymore.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. You're in a very different place in your life today than you were 10 years ago, based on what you've told me.
Oh, not even a close comparison. It is diametrically different. Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all that this was smooth compared to what was not smooth.
Yeah, well, I can't say it surprises me either. I just think it's really noteworthy. Partly because, I mean, I think this is probably the first project. Well, I can kind of count the podcast too. But this particular book is the first project that I've ever had where I didn't try, like Joel described it. He said, I didn't pre-plan it. I didn't try to figure it out. I didn't try to map it. I didn't try to account for all the possible twists and turns. I just started doing it. And then as I started doing it, I just, you know, what came to me? Okay, I do that. What comes to me? I do that. What comes to me? I do that. There was no planning. I mean, there was a little bit of planning in the back of my head because I just do that anyway. But it's not like I sat down and said, okay, I got to plan this thing out. That didn't happen at all. It was just, okay, let's go. Here we go. This is going to be great. And that's the way it was from day one.
When I hear about other people teaching, you know, how to write a book, almost every time I hear, because I've listened to so many of those types of programs and courses and lecturers, because I've always known I had a book in me. Mm-hmm. Granted, I've been a co-author in two books, but neither one of those is the thing that I'm saying I have a book in me. But what I recognize is I keep hearing people saying, you know, just put together an outline, give it a framework and then just start filling it in. And when you were just talking, where you just kind of started and just let it go, that really is my process. And I've let go of, oh, I have to write it the way other people tell me. I have to start with a framework. I have a feeling when Esther sits down to write a book that Abraham gives to her, she doesn't have the framework.
No.
She just starts receiving and writing.
There it is.
Yep. I know the same thing when Jane Roberts was receiving all the Seth books.
Right. Same thing.
Same thing. They never knew from day to day what they were going to receive until they received it.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, and that really is kind of my writing style. I get an idea, something's exciting to me, and I kind of, sometimes I know where my end goal is, like, oh, I want to tell the story about XYZ. And then I just start writing. And then I like write until I have nothing left to write. And then I go back and reread it. And when I do, it's like I start to get, I get the framework then, like after the fact.
Yeah.
And that's my style. And I'm so grateful that I gave up having to follow the rules that other people do. If they work for them, that's awesome. But I don't, my system works for me. And I don't know that I'd want to teach my system because there's no framework in it. It's like you follow your inner being and you just start writing.
Yeah.
You see what comes out.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Although I have to say, there was a movie about this, you know, there was a movie about this topic called Finding Forrester, starring Sean Connery. And Sean plays a reclusive author named William Forrester, who's living in the Bronx and gets accidentally found by a local kid in the neighborhood, a black kid who's a basketball player, basketball star, actually, who also wants to be a writer. And Sean's character ends up teaching the kid to be a writer. Well, and the first scene where you see the two of them, first of all, Sean doesn't have a computer. He's got manual typewriters. So he pulls out these two manual typewriters, puts them on either end of the table. He sits at one end, sits the kid down at the other end, and they put the paper in and he says, "Type." And the kid says, "What am I supposed to type about? You know, shouldn't I figure out the story?" He says, no. "Thinking is for later. Right now you just write." and then Sean Connery is furiously typing away at the keys and the kid's staring at him and he says, "Start typing, man." So the kid starts to type a little bit. He's not sure what to do. Finally, Sean gives him one of his old articles that he wrote. It says, "Okay, start typing what I wrote. And then when your words come to you, just switch over to your words." And so the kid's very slowly typing out, you know, one character at a time. And then Sean's character says, "Punch the keys, damn it." No planning at all.
Wow.
So basically the same thing you're talking about, a little bit more old school, but still.
Mm-hmm. Well, and once upon a time, I started typing on a typewriter too. As a matter of fact, this is just a funny story. I don't know that it's law of attraction, but when I was in high school, by the time I hit my senior year, I wanted some easy courses because I like really packed my freshman, sophomore, junior years with really heavy duty brainy classes. And I was already doing an A average, so it's like, oh God, I just want to slack off. So I took some electives, and one of them was typing, which I thought would be like an easy class. Oh my gosh, was I wrong? Because a typing class is not using your brain
right.
so much. It's not about logic.
It's training.
It's about manual dexterity.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness, and I remember when I got through the end of the class, by the end, I was typing 21 words a minute. And it's like, in order to get an A in the class, I think you had to be typing at least 20 words a minute. So I managed to eke out the A. But I remember thinking, oh my God, nobody will believe that this is the hardest class I've ever taken in high school. Now, what's funny is, oh, I don't even know, maybe 10 years ago when I was searching for a new job, I had gone to, you know, some hiring agency and you had to take a typing test. And I had no idea what I was typing. I mean, I've been behind a computer now for years, but I tested 120 words.
Ooh, there you go.
And I went, now this is worth an A.
Yeah, right.
My 21 words a minute was just really sad and pathetic by comparison to, you know, what people type today. So,
of course, you also have to give yourself a little bit of a break because you were probably typing on a manual typewriter then and a computer keyboard now, which are really quite different.
Oh, yeah. It was a Brother Selectric.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the really hard keys. It was a lighter touch. But, yeah, you still had to punch it a little bit. And you used white correcting tape.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, no. I take it back. In high school, we were using liquid paper.
Liquid paper, white out.
Yeah, they didn't even have the correction tape back then. So, boy, typing was quite the art form. But
actually,
I wanted to do it because I watched my mother do it with ease. She was a secretary.
Oh, really?
And when she would do it, I'm like, oh, my God, look at her fingers go.
Yep.
So who knows how many words she was doing, but I wanted to be like her.
I understand. Well, I remember I actually did do it on a manual typewriter when I was taking it in high school at my one typing class. And on a manual typewriter, first of all, we were doing it on a manual typewriter. Second of all, we were not allowed to use whiteout. We had to just type out whatever came out. And if it was a mess, you lost credit for it. So you really had the impetus put on you to type accurately in addition to punching these really hard keys. I was actually pretty proud of myself. I was the fastest one in the class. I was at 45 words a minute on an old manual keyboard. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
I think I attribute it to the fact that I was a piano player. So I already had some hand strength from that. And that made it easier for me to survive the manual keyboard. But I was so glad when the computer keyboards came along. They're so much easier.
Well, I was watching an episode of Sheldon, and I don't know if anybody's been watching that, but it's like the prequel show to The Big Bang Theory.
Hmm.
And so it's about Sheldon as a young boy. And he had just purchased like a Tandy computer. And what I thought was fascinating was little kids, he's 9 years old. What level of experience would he possibly have at a keyboard? But yet there he was typing, and, you know, and I'm assuming everybody back in the day had to figure out how to type, even if they'd never had a typing class.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, well, my dad mastered the two finger method.
That's my dad was a two finger guy too. And oh my God, was he slow.
Well, actually my dad was pretty quick. He wasn't necessarily clean, but he was quick.
Mm. And when my dad was looking over my shoulder one day and he was watching me type, and when I had mistyped something, I just hit backspace a whole bunch of times. And he goes, why don't you use the mouse and do a cut, you know, like delete? Or he was trying to tell me some other things to do. And I said, because that's too slow. Every time you have to take your hands off the keyboard and go to the mouse, that takes time. I said, my fingers know exactly where the back button is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, trust me, I move faster. And but for him, anytime he didn't have to do a keystroke, that was faster to him.
Well, that's understandable. If you're not a quick typist, that would make a lot of sense. It also probably means he has a little resistance built in there. So he even had an aversion to doing the typing to some degree.
You don't know my father, but yeah, he had, like, his whole life was resistance.
Oh, well, okay. Well, then it was a lucky shot in the dark, put it that way.
Yeah. And he's not here anymore. Now his life is filled with ease, and I'm so happy for him.
Well, that's a good thing. That's now he's typing at an infinite speed.
There you go. We're thinking it into being.
We are indeed.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
So,
we should probably get to the book.
I can tell we're both ready to go to the book, aren't we?
I think we're ready, yeah. Especially since
Alrighty.
We're 37 minutes into the show. It's probably a good time. You know?
All right.
So,
right, let's do it.
To remind everybody, we are working our way through the Law of Attraction, the basics of the teachings of Abraham. We are in part 4, and the subhead we're up to is called I Can Create Deliberately, Intentionally, and Joyfully. And I like joyfully today. That's my watchword for the day. So it says, so we might say an allower is one who has learned the law of deliberate creation and has reached the position where he does not miscreate. He creates deliberately, intentionally, and joyfully. You see, contentment comes from only one place. Contentment comes only from wanting, then allowing, and then receiving. And so as you are moving through this experience of physical life, holding your thoughts in the direction of what is wanted, letting the powerful law of attraction work for you, bringing more and more of the events and circumstances and other beings who are compatible with you into your experience, then you will find your life spiraling upward to joy and freedom. You'll also find you're a best-selling author, by the way. Oh, no, sorry. You have some questions for us regarding the art of allowing, and this is what the next section is. It starts off with the first question. So why don't we do the Jerry and Abraham thing? I'll read Jerry and you read Abraham, okay?
You got it.
So this next section is entitled, I Am Living the Art of Allowing. And Jerry asks, I do have questions, Abraham. To me, the art of allowing is the most exciting topic of them all, which really isn't a question, but that's okay.
But that's a statement.
That's a statement.
And so Abraham responds by saying, allowing is that which you have come forth into this experience to teach. But before you can teach, you must know. Ordinarily, this subject comes up more in the line of, quote, someone is doing something I do not like. How can I get them to do something I do like instead? End quote. And what you come to understand, what you will come to understand is, rather than trying to get the world to all do the same thing or to do the things that you like, it is a much better plan to put yourself in the position of accepting that everyone has the right to be, do, or have whatever they want. And that you, though through the power of your thoughts, will attract unto you only that which is in harmony to you.
So good foundation laid there. Next topic, how can I know right from wrong? Which sounds like a strange question to ask, but I guess it makes sense. I mean, I can see how people would want to know that. So Jerry asks, I didn't know about the art of allowing before meeting you. So the way I used to decide what was right or wrong for me was, if I was considering some particular action, I tried to imagine what the whole world would be like if everyone did it. And then, if it looked like it would be really a joyous or comfortable world, then I'd go ahead with the action. And if it looked like a world that I wouldn't want to live in, if everybody was doing it, then I'd decline to perform the action, so to speak. I'll give you an example.
Let me jump in and say, that perspective is so unique to me.
Mm.
It would never have dawned on me to think I want to do something, and I wonder what it would be like if the whole world did it.
I can't say I thought a lot about that one.
Yeah, that's a different level of thinking. I mean, Jerry, to me, was a very broad thinker.
He was.
And he is the main reason the Abraham message is here.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who ushered it in. It was the gazillions of questions that he had. And he was such an intense, strong asker that's how Abraham came to be.
Pretty much, yeah.
Is to answer his questions. So right. I marvel sometimes at the questions he comes up with and the perspectives that he has. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's actually very true. So he provides an example. He says, I used to like to stream fish for trout. And at first, I fished like everyone else did. I caught every fish that I could possibly catch. But I guess I became a little uncomfortable regarding the rightness or wrongness of doing that. And I thought, what would it be like if the whole world did that? And in my imagination, I realized that if everyone caught fish the way I did, we'd fish all the streams empty, and there wouldn't be any fish left for others to have this spectacular pleasure that I was having. So with that, then my new decision was that I wouldn't kill any of the fish. I would catch them on barbless hook lures, but I would turn them loose. In other words, I'd use a lure without a barb on it, and I'd only take the fish out of the water when someone had asked me to bring it back to them for them to eat. I didn't say that very well, that last bit very well, but yeah.
And so Abraham's response was, good. That which any of us has to offer of greatest value is the example of that which we are. Our words can add to that example. Our thoughts can add to that example. And certainly our actions add to that example. But the key for all of us is our desire to uplift this world, to make more clear decisions about what we want to be at any point in time, and then to be that. That which you are doing in your example is in harmony with that which you are teaching now. In that once you decided what you wanted, then your inner being offered you a motion to help you know the appropriateness of what you were to do about it. In other words, once you had decided that you wanted to uplift this world, once you had decided that you wanted to add unto it and not take from it disproportionately, then any action that you began to make or that you anticipated making that was not in harmony with the intention would have felt uncomfortable to you. You had exaggerated your desire for the world to be in a better place by imagining that everyone in the world did whatever it was that you were thinking about doing, which brought forth exaggerated guidance from within. It is a good way of going about it. You are not trying to get them all to do it. You are only using that idea of them all doing it to help you be clear about whatever it is, or about whether it was a good thing for you or not to do. And it was a good plan. You know, that so beautifully represents what I've been talking about for quite a while, which is when you make a decision, don't act upon it until you've lined up with it. Because when you line up with it, it means that what you believe feels good to you, how you're thinking about it feels good to you. And when it's all feeling good, it means that your inner being is on the same page. And that tells me all systems are go.
Yeah.
And that's when it's time to take action on it.
Yes.
Because it feels good. But when any part of it doesn't feel good, or you're resisting somebody, or anything that just any part of it that doesn't feel good, tells me you're not really aligned to your own decision.
I especially like that second to last sentence where it said, you were not trying to get them all to do it. You were only using that idea of them all doing it to help you be clear about whether it was a good thing for you to do or not. And I thought, wow, if more of us looked at it that way, this would be a much, much happier world. Because
can you think of an example of how you might use that?
Oh, God. It's more like, which one should I pick?
I put you on the spot.
there are so many possibilities. Let's take one from the world of politics. That's a really easy field to draw from for this kind of thing. Let's say that you are a believer, that one is a believer in protecting the environment. Let's say one is really upset about fracking, for instance, okay? And that there's, you know, all this horrible fracking going on and that it's going to ruin the water supply and, you know, create all kinds of environmental disasters, yada, 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 yada. Now, the typical reaction that most people have is, if they're really, really energized about that and even frantic about it, is to become an activist and to encourage other people to become activists and then to, you know, engage in demonstrations or even, you know, violent demonstrations or, you know, violating property rights or whatever else, or, you know, publicity campaigns, whatever it takes to say, stop the fracking, stop the fracking. Mm-hmm. But what they're saying here is what you can do instead is ask yourself, what would you do? And play it out in your own mind. If the whole world did this, what would the result be? Knowing that that would produce a good result for you. So now you're not trying to change the world. You're only trying to change your own thought process. And the process of changing your own thought process, this is the hard part for an activist to understand and to appreciate. In the process of thinking and changing your own thought process, you become an energetic influencer of others. And that's really the best kind of influence to have. Because now you're not arguing with people. Now you're not trying to talk them into something they aren't really ready to do. Now you're not getting all angry. Now you're not frustrated about all the terrible fracking and all this stuff. Instead, you're focusing on, what is it that you actually would want? Well, what you want is a clean environment. What you want is a beautiful environment with fresh, clean water, beautiful water supply, plentiful water supply, fresh and clean and available to all. And, you know, untarnished by whatever else might be out there. In other words, you're not focused on fracking, fracking, fracking. You're focused on the beauty of the environment. And if more people did that, I guarantee you, you may not know how it's going to happen, but over time, fracking would start to fade. It would start to disappear just because people took their attention away from the fracking and put it onto a clean environment.
Well, you did great with coming up with that example. Good job.
Oh, well, that's easy. I was a political science major. That's like, you know, that's second nature to come up with stuff like that.
That was pretty cool. I like that. I like that. Yeah, that's just something. I don't know that this will, like, stick in my thoughts, but just the whole idea of thinking about when I do this action, taking it a step further and expanding it by saying, what would it be like if everybody did this on the planet?
Hmm.
Would I like the result? Hmm. Would I not like
Good
the
question.
Result?
Yeah.
You know, because the thought that comes to mind is about recycling. Many years ago, when the thought of recycling first came on to the scene, I think, you know, like recycled paper was maybe one of the first things I was aware of, you know, and so after a while, I remember thinking, oh, I like the idea of buying something that's made from recycled goods instead mm-hmm. of, you know, brand new. So that made me feel good. But then when people started recycling their own personal trash, it was kind of an inconvenience for me because I didn't even know where there was a recycling place. And it meant I'd have to get some kind of a container and start figuring out what could be recycled, what not. And it was just all like, it felt like too much of a burden.
Mm-hmm.
But then when my city in particular said, we're now going to supply you for free with a recycling bin, which is the same size as my garbage bin.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to do it. It's not mandatory. But should you want to, we will pick up recyclables on the same day we pick up your trash.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, see, now they've made it kind of easy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Is it a little bit more cumbersome in my house because I have to separate things? Yeah, a little bit. But the idea of it made me feel good. And I did think I started considering, well, why are people doing this? Why did this become something that my city is spending money on having this service done? And I started thinking about, you know, all the landfills. And, you know, I live in Texas where we have big open plains in many places, not in the heart of Dallas because, you know, it's a city and there's lots of business buildings and residents. But I love seeing open land. And I started to think about, well, you know, if all the trash in our world keeps expanding, we keep getting more and more trash that has to go into landfills. Eventually, they're going to have to start to cut down trees and make space of what I consider the beautiful scenery in order to make a landfill. And that just kind of went, huh, well, I can't control everybody and get everybody to recycle, but I can do my part. And if I start recycling, maybe I will influence others because people in my neighborhood will see that I have my recycle bin out, you know, every week. And so it is an interesting thing to think about what happens if everybody does it. So first it was like, what happens if nobody does recycling? And now I'm more on the flip side, like, well, I'm doing it now. And I was kind of a hard one to get over to that side. But my city made it so easy for me that it's like, all right, if the city, I now have this bin and I have a choice. I could do nothing with it and it's going to take up space in my garage, or I can actually use it. And I went, oh, fine, I'll get on board. But, you know, I wonder how many people were thinking more like Jerry, like, what would the world be like if more people started to recycle? And mm-hmm. So I'll start to recycle. And now here I am, one of the last holdouts, going, all right, I'll do it. It's like, that's a pretty nice thing to know that people have new thoughts and the ripple effect causes it to gain momentum until you have someone like me who was not going to be a recycler, who's actually recycling on a daily basis.
There you go. And there's also, I want to make sure we really emphasize this other point, which is what end of the stick are you focusing on? You can focus on the lack end of the stick. That's the end of the stick where, oh God, these terrible catastrophes are about to happen because such and such is going on. I mean, you mentioned landfills and landfills filling up and so forth. Oh God, that's such a terrible thing. But there are also people who have a different perspective. In fact, one of the most interesting perspectives I've ever seen, I can't remember exactly where this is. I think there are actually two of them in the country. There are two landfills that built up so high, they turned them into ski resorts.
Wow, I didn't know that.
How about that?
Cool.
Now, that's a completely different perspective. You don't see that by saying, oh God, the landfills are just getting too much. They're getting out of control. You see that by saying, I wonder what I can turn that into.
What a beautiful reframe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all perspective.
That.
It's all perspective. It's just a question of which way you're going to come at it. Are you going to come at it negatively? If you do, you're going to be angry as hell. Or mm-hmm. are you going to come at it positively and say, you know what? Everybody else here is seeing lemons. I'm going to find the lemonade. Because the lemonade's in there somewhere. I just got to find it.
You know, I have this image in my head of something I saw on TV one time. I don't remember what third world country it was, but they were on the shores of either an ocean or a bay or something where there was a large body of water. And they had so much trash along the shoreline. I mean, empty water bottles were everywhere, but there was just tons of every kind of trash. And of course, the question was, you know, this is unsightly and what are we going to do about it? And can anything be done about it? And it was such a poor country that they didn't really have the financial resources to do anything. But somebody from America, where we have more resources, saw it and it really touched their heart and they wanted to do something about it. And it caused them to innovate some new technology that could literally gather up all this stuff. Not to mention they put the people to work. They like were able to pay people in that country, which is a very poor country, because if they could like gather up all these bottles, they were going to bring them over to the United States and they were going to somehow use them as a recycled product. And I remember it was going to have something to do with becoming part of shampoo bottles. And okay. I know I'm telling very little of the story, but I remember thinking how ingenious this whole thing was, that first of all, there was a problem which was there was a mess and it was polluting the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of like your, the example you gave of a landfill being turned into a ski hill. This all of a sudden became a way for the people of that poor country to earn money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure the person who did the innovation of whatever stuff they did, they probably made money on that.
Yep.
And then they made money from selling their recyclable goods to people who are making shampoo bottles. And now they could get them at a lesser dollar. But it's like it touched so many people's lives. It touched different industries. And apparently the revenue that's now coming into the people, into that country because people have jobs, it's actually elevated their country's financial state of being.
Pretty cool.
All because of a problem.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is very amazing. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just causing me to think in a much more profound way about every problem is only a problem if that's the only thing you focus on.
Exactly right. Exactly.
But inherent within every problem lies a solution.
It's all in there.
And when you focus on what's the solution, the problem actually isn't a problem anymore.
That's right.
It was the catalyst for something new.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is very cool. I like that idea.
Yeah. It all comes down to one thing. Which way are you going to look at it? Are you going to look at it from the idea that it's terrible? Or are you going to look at it from the point of view that says, you know what? This can be turned into something else. I wonder what that something else is.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the biggest complaints we've been talking about environmental stuff. I remember this mm-hmm. from quite far back. The big complaint that plastics were the worst thing in the world because when you throw them into the landfill, they last forever.
Right.
Now, I haven't followed this carefully, and I can't point you to sources, but I do know I kind of picked this up. My ears picked this up at some point. There are at least one or two initiatives out there where people are figuring out how to turn plastic into energy.
Wow.
How about that?
Well, considering we have as much plastic as we do, if that can be turned into energy, I think the whole landfill question would be done with, you know.
Now, I have no idea how much progress they made, but I know that there are people who are working on that. Now, that's a great way to change your perspective on it. You
that's
just refuse
cool.
to buy into the idea that, oh, we have to be buried in plastic. Just change that perspective. Amazing what you can do when you change your perspective. Yeah.
Well, if you can turn plastic into energy, I mean, the plastic in itself is energy. Everything, every atom, every molecule, every substance is energy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can turn it into something that is the kind of energy that we think about that can actually fuel things with power, I don't know, it's a cool metaphor for power in itself.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And again, I don't know exactly what's come out of that. I have not followed it at all. You'd have to do some Googling and so forth to find out. But just the idea that you could even try that, that dares to break through barriers. And that's what we need. We need people to break through their own barriers because that's what the barriers are. They aren't really barriers that are out there. They are barriers in our own minds. We just got to break through our mental
exactly.
barriers.
Wow. Well, I'm happy right now focusing on that there really are no problems.
Mm.
There really are only solutions. And if we choose to focus on the solutions, it shifts our whole life because our whole perspective has been changed. And wow. Now there's something. What if everybody in the world thought about the solutions that were inherent within everything that they think of as a problem?
Well,
how might that change the perspective of the entire planet?
Well, I know the answer. They'd all become listeners of LOA Today.
And they'd want to get our free book that we're offering today through Monday.
Absolutely. So don't forget, after you've listened to this podcast, presuming you're listening within a few days of us doing this recording, go right to Amazon, search for Your Daily Dose of Happy, Real Success Stories of the Law of Attraction. Just search for Your Daily Dose of Happy. It'll come right up. Get your free ebook and start reading away. And Wendy, it's been a pleasure. Let's do it again on Tuesday.
Let's do it. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy Memorial Day. And we'll see you back here next Tuesday.
And enjoy reading the book, too. Tell us what you think about it. Send us an email. And we'll see you next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye for now.